Next item on the agenda is item number 7, Grayland Horn, number 18-1656. Mr. Woodward, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Commissioner Bowman, members of the commission. Belated Happy Earth Day. Isn't every day Earth Day? I put it in several places, so I'll be sure to have it. And let's see if I can find it. Good morning. Grayland Horn is requesting authorization to construct two 210-foot long by 19-foot wide, that's the base width, quarry stone breakwaters, and two 45-foot long by 16-foot base width quarry stone spurs and associated clean sand beach nourishment and wetland plantings to create a living shoreline along 600 linear feet of shoreline of the Rappahannock River off Pop Castle Road, near the town of Whitestone in Lancaster County. The applicant has asked for consideration of mitigation alternatives for compensation of submerged aquatic vegetation impacts. And some of what I touch on will go kind of hand in hand with what Dr. Luckenbach talked about, albeit shoreline hardening and not aquaculture, with shallow water competition, shallow water conflicts with SAV. Here's the project. Actually, you'll see another slide in a second that was the VIMS presentation of the same area of the Rappahannock River, mouth of the Rappahannock River, town of Whitestone, Irvington. It's this little reach of shoreline just up from the Route 3 bridge. A little closer view. The property here you see generally between these two developed parcels. And one more zoom in. These are lines, the red lines are lines I added. They're not from the county tax map, but I believe that generally represents the boundaries of the property. On October 2018, we received an application from Mr. Horn proposing a single 450-foot long by 24-foot wide base width quarry stone continuous breakwater located 99 feet from the base of the existing eroding bank at his property on the north shore of the Rappahannock River. The river is approximately 2 miles wide to the south, with a fetch in a southeasterly direction of 8 miles to the mouth of the river. And if you look right straight down, you can, if you can see that far, it would be the eastern shore 25 miles away. So there's a long fetch, pretty exposed shoreline. The 8-acre parcel is currently undeveloped, and the exposed shoreline is experiencing severe erosion with loss of many trees and upland soils. It is the last untreated, unarmored property along this reach of river. And when I say reach, I'm basically describing from the bridge up to the mouth of Carter Creek at Crab Point before you go in. Everything else is either armored with riprap, as you see here and all along here, and there's some groins on either side of the river as well. There is currently an application, a lease of 37.9 acres held by W.E. Kellum, 300 feet offshore in this area. And the project will impact a persistent, dense bed of submerged aquatic vegetation, predominantly rupia, widgeon grass, that comes within approximately 10 feet of the high water shoreline at its closest, according to the most recent 2013 to 2017 VIMS data. Again, we have different layers annually plus a cumulative layer, if you will, of the most recent 5 years. Let me do a few more. This is the bed of SAV that showed up in Dr. Luckenbach's presentation. Again, this is VIMS data, the bridge, Whitestone. And you can see here the green represents a density of 4, which is the highest density, greater than 70%. The yellow is 30 to 70%, I believe. And you can again see some of these other lines of SAV in the recent past. So we have worked closely with VIMS and their data to be able to share that data with applicants and projects like this. And I don't want to say it's a continuum. It's here one year, it's here somewhere else. Again, he can say it much more eloquently than I can. This is the data layer we use based on what VIMS provides to us. When we look at a project, we identify the location, we turn on layers, where the leased grounds are, where the SAV is, fixed fishing devices, and so forth. And this is the most recent 2013 to 2017 compilation of data that shows where the SAV has been persistent through that time period. And again, this is Mr. Horn's parcel. You can note trees down on the shoreline. This aerial photograph is somewhat dated, but I've got some more recent ground shots that'll show you it's getting hammered pretty good. This was the original application, and it shows the 450-foot continuous breakwater. We looked at this. We went back to VIMS. We discussed it with the applicant and his agent in an effort to not only reduce, avoid, minimize, and mitigate SAV impacts, but also to get to a living shoreline breakwater project that's stable and meets the criteria that we see around the bay on some of the projects that have shown to be proven effective. Actually, the applicant contacted me prior to his purchase of the property to discuss some of his ideas. We met with representatives from SEAS, Shoreline Erosion Advisory Service, of the Division of Conservation and Recreation, to actually come up with a plan to move forward that would be acceptable to all. But I mentioned to the Horns right up front, I said, there's SAV out there. It almost doesn't matter what you propose. If you're going offshore, it's going to impact SAV. So we need to mitigate for that. We need to avoid it where possible. And if we can't mitigate and avoid, there may be compensation for anything that's approved. And at no time did I say, you will get a breakwater permit. I didn't. I don't recall saying that. This is the most recent iteration where he's provided a gap. And you can see it's been moved inshore a little bit. It was 99 feet offshore. It's 75 feet now. The breakwaters, in this case, I'm sorry, not the most recent iteration, the second iteration, because this does show 24-foot wide base width. The most recent iteration is this one with an additional overlay of the SAV, where the breakwaters themselves have been reduced base width by 5 feet. They have been moved inshore 5 feet. And this is what is proposed today. This proposal will result in approximately 14,175 square feet of beach, with 6,500 square feet of that amount as vegetated wetland. So what you can see in this drawing is these are areas I would call beach, where it's not shaded or it's lightly shaded. That light shading is actually the SAV overlay. But this darker green is the proposed areas of planted wetland vegetation to create a living shoreline of rock, sand, and plants. And then this yellowish green is the transition to the upland. And again, these are what we would consider spurs to create these pocket beaches of a stabilized stabilized breakwater living shoreline. The applicant's agent took all the data and laid it over and came up with his estimated area of SAV impacts being here. And these are the estimated areas of impacts resulting from the fill and not from the breakwaters. This area, truthfully, of the breakwaters would also be blue hatched as impact. We looked to VIMS for this first and then the subsequent revisions for a more definitive estimate of impact to SAV, and that impact is 11,000. Let me find it. I know it's in here. 11,000 square feet, 11,631 square feet of direct impact resulting from either the rock or the sand fill of this project. We'll move on to a few more slides. Cross-section view, again, first iteration you can see down at the bottom of these drawings when the drawings were submitted. And again, that's the second iteration in the final request that's before us today, before you today. 19-foot wide base width breakwater, sand fill, plantings over the central part of the tombolo, which is the area of sand fill behind the breakwater. And then this would be the spur. There's a spur on either end, upstream and downstream. These don't appear to go into the SAV beds, and there's no fill associated with these. One of the site visits, that's actually the applicant's agent out in the near shore area moving stakes landward to more accurately reflect the alignment of the project. I'm now standing on the upriver shoreline, the adjacent property owner, looking downriver. Recent tree that's fallen as I'm crawling around on the shoreline. You can see the stakes in the background. That's the alignment. When it was 24 feet, that's been reduced to 19. The recent blow we had, you can see these two trees and others along the shoreline falling at a different angle are just more trees that are falling into the river, bringing bank material, sediment, nutrients with it. I took these the day after that, 2 days after that, showing in concept what a living shoreline breakwater project is. You've seen them. This is actually at VIMS. Breakwater offshore, sand fillet, sand area behind, the tombolo, if you will, planted. It's a living shoreline. It's not a sill. It's not a marsh. But it is, by definition, a living shoreline. And just another picture, that's Yorktown in the background. DCR has commented that there are natural heritage resources in the area, bald eagles, but indicate that this project, due to its proximity and scale, shouldn't affect those resources. The Lancaster County Wetlands Board approved the project actually in its second iteration, which was the wider base width breakwaters, a little bit further offshore, but there were no changes to the intertidal impacts resulting from the changes. The along shore, the near shore impacts from the mean low to mean high water shoreline, the impacts haven't changed. Corps of Engineers is currently reviewing the application and will be taking SAV into consideration. And why we're here today is Mr. Horn is asking for alternatives to how we have required compensation for SAV impacts in the recent past. And that has been for permitted reasonable impacts to the SAV resource, we have charged a fee, an in-lieu fee of $2 per square foot. That $2 per square foot goes to help fund SAV restoration work that's undertaken by currently by VIMS, Dr. Orth, to seed eelgrass in lower bay areas. So it's in the bay. These aren't bay, as far as I know, these aren't bayside restoration. So it's in kind in the sense that it's in the bay. And it's on site as far as it's in the bay, and it's in kind, it's SAV. It's eelgrass, not rupia. But they've had much more success with eelgrass seed planting. They're the only ones that have had any success with SAV restoration that I'm aware of in the state. So in summary recommendation, as Dr. Luckenbach had mentioned, his term was shallow water competition, shallow water conflicts, whether it be aquaculture, whether it be living shoreline, near shore armoring techniques, whether it be prop dredging resulting from hull seiners. I mean, there's a lot of impact, especially in the shallow water areas where the SAV wants to grow. 28.2104.1 of the code encourages the use of living shorelines as the preferred alternative for stabilizing tidal shorelines in the Commonwealth. Here's a case where he's doing what's recommended, but there are resulting impacts. And we have always, as a staff, tried to avoid those impacts. Avoid, minimize, mitigate, but always avoid first. The Commission's subaqueous guidelines state, should a permitted project result in loss or impact of submerged aquatic vegetation, compensatory mitigation may be required. This may include transplantation of SAV from the area of impact or planting a new area. Compensation ratios and requirements will depend on the density, location, and species of SAV. That's directly from the guidelines. What we have done in the past as a staff, I showed you the density levels before. This particular bed currently identified as MB4, this is the identifier, the 4 represents density. In 3 of the past 5 years, it's been a density of 30% to 70%. In 2 of the past 5 years, it's been a density of greater than 70%. By doing some math and coming up with some averages, we came up with, over the past 5 years, there's a density of this bed of 61%. We take that 61%, multiply it by the 11,631 square feet of encroachment, and we come up with 7,095 square foot of SAV loss that needs to be compensated for. Staff is currently recommending $2 per square foot, as we've done in the past. As a compensation alternative to funding additional seeding by VIMS, the applicant may be given the option to implement a nutrient reduction or sediment reduction project in or along the uplands near the project site. Again, areas outside the commission's jurisdiction, but because it's a continuum, we can take that into consideration over and above whatever the locality would require under the Bay Act. You know, you take a tree, you got to plant a tree. That's all under the Bay Act. You know, we wouldn't consider that as any compensation, but if you plant 2 or 5 or 10, maybe that additional tree planting could act as an offset for nutrient uptake and sediment reduction. Such projects, while considered out-of-kind mitigation, would serve to replace the nutrient and sediment reduction services provided by SAV. In such cases, nutrient and sediment reduction should be shown to replace the amount of either sediment or nutrient reduction functions associated with the SAV that is lost due to a given project. Until new research is completed or studies have been identified to determine the sediment or nutrient reduction function of a given SAV species, best scientific and management estimates will be acceptable for determining the required amount of sediment or nutrient reduction. The proposed nutrient or sediment reduction mitigation should not, however, be one already required for property development, as I mentioned, under the Bay Act or other local or federal requirements. Should such an alternative strategy be acceptable to the Commission in this case, provided the project is approved, the applicant would need to submit a sediment or nutrient reduction plan, which we would review, find to be acceptable. I'm sure we'd work with VIMS on that, to staff before issuance of the final permit. It's a brave new world.
And for the record, this is the first of one of these that we have had, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's come forward with, at least during my tenure, that I've seen.
I believe it's the first that's come to the commission. We have had other projects where we offered to the applicant and they accepted the mitigation alternative, the in lieu fee.
As you said, brave new world. It's definitely new to us. Anyway.
And I would be happy to try to answer any questions. I will just leave this up here and stand by.
Questions of Mr. Woodward by members of the commission. Mr. Ballard.
Would I be right in thinking the SAV, I think I heard, comes up 10 feet to the shoreline, so it would be impossible for him to move the breakwaters closer to avoid the SAV altogether? Is that the thought?
Yes, with a caveat that he could move the breakwaters closer to shore. To do that, he would have to grade more upland back and take more trees and more riparian buffer that he would have to get approval from the county to do. A lot of the material in the bank will be the fill, which the beach down there now is the bank that's now fallen into the beach. However, when you grade that back, you can go through and separate out the coarser sand material from the clay and everything else, and there probably won't be enough bank material for the amount of fill that he's being that he's requesting. You bring in clean sand, it has to be 90% sand by definition.
Further questions? Well, okay. Is the thank you, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Is the applicant present or represented?
Okay. Is it?
No, it's.
Here we go.
Plug in there.
Right, stand by one.
Oh, well, while he's doing that, sir, will you raise your right hand?
Yes, sir.
You solemnly swear the testimony you give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes.
Thank you.
Transit.
Can you drive from here?
Yeah. I hope so. Which, well, I'll wait till it loads. Where's the escape key? There we go. Yes, Joseph Scott,
thank
P.O. Box 1315, Kilmarnock, Virginia 22482. I'm the agent for the applicant who is also here and who would like to speak as well. A lot of this that I'm going to go through really quickly is rather redundant, but this is government, so we like redundancy.
No, well, some government is. I can assure you this board appreciates brevity and direct now.
Yeah. So I'm going to roll through really quickly. As Mr. Woodward stated, began in summer 2018. I was not involved when it was originally had begun. The applicant was trying to conquer some of the stuff himself, and I think it kind of grew to a point where he felt like he needed some help. So there's three official revisions, but I'm going to go through a quick project evolution of this thing to give you a better understanding in terms of context, because there's lots of things that you guys didn't see that staff has seen and that everyone else has seen. Obviously, it was stated that the 400-foot continuous structure was what the applicant desired. I've been doing this stuff on and off for about 15 years, and sometimes you just have to throw stuff into the fire and get kicked back so that the applicant can understand that they can't really do it that way. Not trying to throw you under the bus, but sorry. So through education at VIMS, CEs, VMRC, I got involved, and he accepted the redesign with less encroachment into the submerged lands, and also we worked extensively with the county as well in terms of a planting plan that reduces the upland runoff and planting, which includes about 100 trees, about 21,000 square feet of more season grasses, and then the nourishment area that's going to be proposed behind there to be planted with about 6,500 square feet of appropriate wetlands vegetation. This is one of the originals that was not submitted, where the applicant wanted to go 95 feet offshore with a continuous breakwater that I talked him down out of that tree about. And we had 450 foot long with 24 foot base, which morphed into the 75 feet when the area that's there behind the breakwater at that time was somewhat deemed fill by the Virginia Institute of Marine Science because it was just going to be all sand. It was going to try to be maintained more or less as a dune. So we've morphed into, at that point, 37,750 square feet of impact, which is considerably more than where we are now. Moved to a two breakwater design, and this was the one that took us back to about 18,000 square feet from 37,000. And then we have the design that we have now, where we have about 14,175, which has been down to the 11,000 that Mr. Woodward spoke of. We're about 70 feet offshore, which is important because when I go through some more slides, I'll show you how we came to that kind of distance offshore. Because at one point, there's been lots of talk about this needs to be pulled back even further, but it's really more of a design and hopefully a sustainability issue rather than we're trying to go out as far as we can go. You've seen these already, 19-foot base. We're about 45 feet channelward of mean low water. So even though we're 70 feet offshore, the whole entire 70 feet is not all subaqueous bottom. And in this area, the water there is approximately about 12 inches deep or less at low tide. And this picture will show that average height is about 27 inches near high tide and about 12 inches or less, which obviously this isn't scaled, but you can see the scum line on that, and I've actually been there to measure it. So, and this would be the channel where most PVC pipe that's marking out there. So the water is very, very shallow in this area. Underwater grass in this particular area has been observed by the applicant and an adjacent property owner who's lived there for almost 20 years who would like to speak as well, to being very ephemeral. It comes and goes very quickly, which, of course, is associated with Wigeon grass. It's really kind of a boom or bust species. Mr. Woodward alluded to the fact that perhaps, you know, in one year it's at this 30 to 70%, the next year is at over 70 or 90%. And obviously they're sensitive to pollution, respond to quick water quality improvements. And we're hoping that by creating this, overall, the entire project will actually improve the water quality in this particular area, unfortunately, that we're impacting. Intertidal area in this area is 25 feet from the bank, and we're about 70 feet offshore to the back edge of where the stone is going. And I'm showing these pictures to give you an idea of relative to what it is, because what it looks on paper is enormous. But really, it's not as far offshore, I think, as it shows on paper. Relative to a neighbor's dock there, we're about 70 feet offshore. That shows you the backside of where the PVC stakes are. 70 feet. So these are some pictures of various other projects, breakwater projects around the Commonwealth. This one, obviously, is Yorktown, 1,700 feet of shoreline. Those red lines represent about 70 feet from the backside of the breakwater up into the beach area. This is one from Jamestown Beach, which is another 1,200 feet of shoreline. And again, there's your lines. And those breakwaters appear to be using, this is using Google Earth and its GIS products, about 150 feet offshore. These were built, you may recall them, on the York River in an area that doesn't have a lot of sand, but these were approved. 1,400 square feet of shoreline. It was about 14,000 square foot of nourishment there. And again, there's about the 70 feet offshore. And then, of course, the VIMS ones, as Mr. Woodward showed earlier. And then these are down at Windmill Point, which are similar in size to what we're proposing now. They're about 200 feet long. And this is a 700-foot section of shoreline. And obviously, they're very close to the houses there, but that's Windmill Point for you. So it's designed in a fashion that's similar to a lot of other projects that we've looked around the Commonwealth and seen and thought these are pretty solid and it would probably sustain. To get the 10-to-1 slope would honestly be pretty difficult to achieve with any less distance out into the water after running all the numbers. And we're desiring a 4-to-1 slope in the upland bank, which is unusual in some spots because it does require more in terms of Bay Act preservation. However, we want to make more of a natural transition to the shore, and we want to avoid the need for revetment. A lot of times there was one just approved in Lancaster probably 6 months, maybe a year ago, where they built an offshore breakwater, but then they also came up on the upland and put in a revetment. We're trying to avoid that. We're trying to make this as natural as possible. So. And the 4-to-1 slope actually will allow better compliance for Chesapeake Bay Act plantings because you can plant more on a 4-to-1 than you could on a typical 2-to-1. Pictures J shown, these were ones from out in the water that I took on November the 4th. Obviously, you can see one tree down. All those trees right there in the circle weren't down November the 4th. However, if we scroll through, there you go. That was March 29th. Most of them fell down through the significant rains we've had. There's the same view of the bank. Now we have more trees on the shoreline. And then April 17th, this is one that Jay had shown you. There's the stake alignment. So all of what we're proposing is actually within the area of what the trees are covering now that they've fallen into the water. It's a big section of it. Sorry. He's wondering as an applicant, we're wondering as an applicant, the survival of the SAV in the future. Obviously, you can't look at that too much because it's based on the 5-year scale, but now you have a natural impact of about 8,000 square feet of the trees that have fallen there that are probably going to potentially disrupt their growth this coming season. We have 11 trees down on site, and there are two large oaks remaining that, if we don't wrap this thing up soon, they're going to be in the river as well. I'm kind of excited about this, but sorry that I have to be here, because this is the first time I've ever been given a 700 feet of shoreline by an applicant who actually wants to do a living shoreline and kind of do it the right way. The upriver side of this is shown in this picture here. We have three different management approaches. You have groins, you have a small breakwater, and then you have a revetment. Mr. Horn is very interested in having a living shoreline at this particular site, and there's not too often that you get 700 feet of untouched shoreline in Lancaster actually do something of this nature. So goals and mitigated measures we have this. We reduced the impact area from 37,750 square feet to about 14,175. Direct impact from SUV at the first was actually estimated at 49,254. That's in the BIMS, the original BIMS report, and has been reduced to about 11,631. Reduction in the base width of the stone, and also the bank stabilization with appropriate planning in effort to reduce or slow down the upland runoff. Potential to provide consistent water quality and clarity in the immediate area, because most of the time these things are done with a 2-to-1, or sometimes they don't even grade the bank. And this is all versus a revetment. We wouldn't be here if he just wanted to do a revetment up against the bank. So I'm very thankful that he wants to do this particular project in this manner. And the living shoreline planting, about 6,500 square feet behind it, that's about 46% of the 14,000 175 square feet that are going to be nourished. And the applicant is very open to any sort of, if VIMS would like to study the site, if it's approved, and if it goes through, if VIMS would like to study the site to see how it looks or how it's going to transform over time, he's very open to any of that sort of stuff. I think his biggest hang-up, and I'll let him speak more to that, is to the fact of, We've tried to do everything that's right in terms of following the living shoreline protocol, and then we get to the end of the race, and that's like it. There's grass out there. There's more grass than we expected. It's denser than we expected, and it's going to cost you. Originally, we're in like the $28,000 fee range. Now we're down a little bit from that. But I think we'd like for you to look at this project as a whole. Obviously, your jurisdiction is from low water forward, but as a whole, overall, we're trying to create a project that's going to be good in the long term for this particular area rather than just throwing stone against the bank, and at least give that some consideration in terms of when you come up with a number in terms of a fee. I read up on widgeon grass. I'm not a scientist, by the way, but some of the stuff I've read that it's kind of a hit or miss in how you plant it in terms of just throwing it out there and letting it happen. So if there's anything that you might be willing to consider, or considering the project as a whole in terms of how well it has been proposed, and in design terms, do you guys have any questions for me?
Questions of the gentleman, members of the commission, Mr. Ballard.
Have you put any thought or have an idea, or a way to quantify the impact of doing nothing, i.e. the SAV beds are out there, what would be the impact to the applicant not doing anything? Do you think they'd remain the same, or would they be hurt by continued erosion of the bank?
That would be a good question for them, honestly, because I'm really not qualified to say that. We've already had the credentialing thing mentioned earlier today, but from my standpoint of having done this over time, I think the potential exists. There have been times, and this is why we have the whole long spiel here, I'm trying to give you context. There's been times where I've had people come to me and want to do this, and immediately cost becomes an issue because of the scope of the project is enormous. And usually they only tend to go through when there's an upland project like this and somebody's in the process of carving it up and they want to do it all at once. This is not the case, and Mr. Horn can speak to that, where he's bought this parcel with the idea of building a home on it. It's really neat that it's gotten to this point, but it's an issue in that there's the SAB and these particular cases come up to the shore. Now, if we had done this 5 years ago, who knows? One of the pictures you saw earlier that just is the Google Earth picture on a regular basis, the naturally occurring or what's there more often perhaps is further offshore than what is on the five-year overlay where it does pop up, and the applicant can speak to this as well. It popped up one Thursday. They were down there, and by Sunday it had been fried because it was like 100 degrees that weekend. So it's very ephemeral in that particular area.
Further questions? Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Who else wishes to be heard on this matter? The applicant? Yes, sir.
My name is Michael York. I'm the adjacent property owner. I believe I did that, but yes, sir.
For the record, do you solemnly swear the testimony that you give be the truth, all truth, and none but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you, Mr. York.
I submitted a written, so I won't take up just a couple of minutes of the time. With due respect to Jay, I want to correct one thing he said. I believe he, or correct and clarify, I believe you said there would be no effect in the negative to the bald eagles and other migratory birds. I got to tell you, from having been there almost 20 years, the effect would be very good, a very good effect, because I have a picture I'll submit for the record. Most of those trees you saw in the water were previous habitats of bald eagles and peregrine falcons. We're still fortunate that it's a rare day we don't see one. But that's one of the reasons I'm very much supporting Mr. Horn's application. And the other thing I have to tell you is that I was a lead counsel in the SEC matter that you're probably familiar with, the Dominion Underwater order that we won in place of the tower project. And we want to thank you, obviously, for permitting that under the consent docket a few months ago. But as part of that representation over the last 4 or 5 years, I've become an intense student of not just the Bay and the Rappahannock, but this particular site that's part of this project. And I can tell you I was impressed with Dr. Lugenbach's presentation. In fact, I don't know if it won't take the time to ask him to put one slide back up, but it is true that there has been a replenishment and a growth of a robust growth of SAB throughout the entire area. However, you heard Mr. Scott talk about the ephemeral nature of the SAB at this particular site. And I just have to tell you, by looking at the slides, they may have looked dramatic. I can tell you they look much worse in person, almost horrific. And I can see, having looked at it for 19 years, a direct correlation between large storms, large runoff, sedimentation, erosion, and the dying off, the reduction of SAV. So to that extent, from a policy standpoint, it's not legal, but from a policy standpoint, I can't say enough about the remediation effects. And to Mr. Ballard's point, I guess it's a better question for Mr. Horn. I'd be horrified if the commission decided it was best to do nothing, because I don't believe there would be anything other than continued erosion and damage to the whole area and the environment.
Thank you, Mr. York. Any questions of the gentleman? Thank you, sir.
Let me also say, Judge, congratulations. You're entering with a class of a very good friend of mine, Sharon Nelson, and in your case and hers, too. It's richly deserved.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We concur. Mr. Horn, present. Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, the whole truth, and none but the truth, so help you God.
Yes, sir.
State your name for the record, please.
Graylin Horn.
See.
I'm currently the property owner, along with my wife and my five children. What I'm hoping for you guys to do is have the ability to look at this project as an entirety. And I believe that if everyone looks at it as an entirety, the net positive is significantly more than the 11,000 square feet that we're losing of SAV. I do believe strongly, and this is one of the reasons why I would like to offer VIMS the ability to study this project. I do believe that if you stop the erosion sediment of the nutrients and everything else that's coming off that cliff, that while we're taking away 11,000 square feet, we will actually gain at the end of the day by reducing the sediment and everything else running. We'll have a better and more sustainable SAV bed. So I would like to make that offer, and I'm hoping that you guys would have the ability to approve this without the SAV assessment.
Questions of the gentleman? Thank you, Mr. Horn.
Thank you.
Anyone else in support of the project? Is there anyone here in opposition to the project? Seeing none, the matter is before the commission for discussion and action. The staff does not have a recommendation per se. What was the recommendation, Jay, per se?
I may have skipped right through that. I apologize.
And I may have missed it. But
no, I'm pretty sure I skipped through it. It's actually in your evaluation. We are recommending an assessment of an in-lieu fee at the rate of $2 per square foot for the 7,000 square feet of direct impact resulting from the 11,000 square feet of impact at a rate of 61% density. So the physical impact that VIMS has determined is in fact 11,631 square feet multiplied by the density of the bed brings us to 7,095 square feet of loss to be compensated through an in-lieu fee fund to fund additional VIMS seeding at a cost of $14,189.82.
All righty. Thank you. Yes, sir, Mr. Zeisman.
If that was left just like it is right now, what kind of loss would we experience on that grass if it was left just like it is?
I believe I'm more of a simplistic thinker, but the loss that would be resulting from the sediment increase, you're also expanding inshore. You're making more subaqueous land every time the bank erodes. So maybe that SAV will move inshore. I don't know. I don't know how to quantify it. All I know is when you look at a 60-70 foot oak that falls in carrying the bank with it, whatever's in that bank material, nutrients, phosphorus, nitrogen, is going into the bay.
Mr. France?
Could you put the, I think, Google Earth picture of the site back up, please? You had it like an aerial view.
Yeah, I'm going to try to find it here. Just the one?
It was one that showed the SAV, not the showed the original. You could see the SAV in the fallen trees and.
Oh, you mean just a site photo? Uh
huh. Yes, please.
Well, you know.
There you go. Yeah.
And this was. It says most recent. I believe this is 2015 or 16. It's again. You're right. You can see the SAV here. This looks like somebody's been dredging oysters. Probably Mr. Kellum, I would hope. But yeah, there's you can see the trees down here.
You have a follow up, Mr. France, or you just want to say that?
Maybe a question from Mr. Luckenbach.
It would be Lyle, or who's coming up?
Well, probably Lyle.
Let's hustle on up here.
Lyle? Question for VIMS.
Mr. Varnell, previously sworn.
Yes.
Mr. Varnell, we can see in the area where this property is, it looks like
SAV is less abundant than in the areas around it. And would that be from the nutrient runoff and the erosion? And
it could be. You've asked some complex questions about this. Let me answer it in this way. I can't give you definitives today because there's a lot of unknowns. However, what we've been mapping these areas for decades, of course. This is considered a persistent bed. What you see is the margins moving in and out a lot of times. Sometimes it's a heavy hit depending upon temperature, runoff, whatever that happens. What seems to get lost in translation with these situations is what you're looking at is the natural condition. It may not be favorable if you own the property, but that is the natural condition. And that has been the natural condition for many, many years. And that SAV has persisted adjacent to that erosion for as long as that property has been there with that SAV. So it will come and go. Nobody has to tell us how ephemeral SAV is, but it will come and go like that, yes. In this particular one-time snapshot, I wouldn't go on record saying what is and what isn't because it's a persistent bed that has had densities 70 to 100% over its span of monitoring.
By the way, Mr. France?
Yes. Also, where you see the revetments at where the shoreline has been.
You mean here?
Repaired and even to the right. It looks like SAV is even flourishing better after the revetments have been put there.
In this one snapshot, yes. Now, some of that, I won't say that it's all SA. Some of it could be ulva, sea lettuce in certain cases. It may or may not be. But there is diversity within these shallow areas of benthic algae and SAV. But that's probably some SAV, and it's doing very well there, yes.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Ballard?
A question for staff, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Lyle.
You probably can't answer the question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Best answer is there's no answer. Fred Fisher said that many years ago as our attorney.
Seem a fool.
As I understand it, every case we look at is evaluated on its own merits, and none of them are precedent-setting. If we were to determine a more favorable rate than the $2 per square foot, how much headache does that create for you?
I'm not management, so I don't get the same headaches.
In all due respect, I'm not so sure. You know, to my good friend, if you want to rephrase the question, it would be appropriate. They don't have headache factor as far. The decision is ours. If you want to get into the environmental aspect, is what about this? What about that? That's fine, but I would prefer.
I guess I'll rephrase this. Do you agree that each case is evaluated on its own?
Yes, I do.
And this would not be setting a precedent.
I would agree with that statement.
Okay.
Thanks. Further questions? To your point, I look at this project as an opportunity for a number of reasons. Taking into consideration what Mr. Varnell had said, yes, this is the natural occurring scenario. And what it is what it is and what you see. That being said, this provides this gentleman an opportunity to stabilize a piece of property, to work toward a living shoreline, which certainly is endorsed by the code. It's going to take some money to do this. And I'm of the opinion that to try this, to do it the correct way, with all caveats in place that passed the staff's approval in conjunction with VIMS, as far as the living shoreline is concerned, It may provide an opportunity for both study and also stabilization versus no ill intent toward Dr. Orth and Vim's program as far as the seating program is concerned for SAV. But this gives you an opportunity to do something in that area as far as mitigation is concerned. I can't find anything wrong with it at this juncture as long as it passes the test of the professionals that we have both on staff and on VIMS to stabilize it. That's just my opinion. I think I've seen there's a piece of property go across the James River Bridge just downstream or upstream from it on the western shore that is eroding to the point where before you know it, the whole lot will be in the James River all the way up to the road because the person's not doing anything with it. He won't take the money or the whatever reason. And it's really kind of sad to see that when you can have two things going on, a nice waterfront piece of property that's properly stabilized. So I can't make a motion, as I've said before, but I like the forward thinking of the project as it deals with living shorelines. Further comment? The matter's before the commission. Mr. Ballard.
I agree with your comments and agree with looking at the project in totality. And I tend to believe that it is a net environmental positive. And while it may not be, I think the term used was it may not be allowing what's naturally happening to occur. I would take exception that I'm not sure we can view as any current happenings in this area or the Chesapeake Bay really as purely natural, that erosion has increased from other man-made activities, certainly from surrounding shorelines having changed, and that this is a very good alternative, albeit an expensive one, and it's very difficult for individual property owners to undergo good projects like this, and I hate to tack an extra $14,000 onto an already very expensive cost of someone who seems to have designed a really good project. So I move that we – I'm going to need some help in phrasing this right – but accept the project, that we approve the project without any mitigation costs for the effects on SAV.
With the conditions set forth that the plan that's provided passes staff's muster.
Right. So the staff recommendation is one page long. Can my motion be to approve staff recommendation except the $2 per square foot, to change that to $0 per square foot?
Will that pass? Does that satisfy what needs to be done? Mr. Watkins, come here, please.
I mean, that motion's clear.
That motion is clear.
Your perspective.
That's all I need to know. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Ms. Lusk. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Good luck with your project. Looking forward to good things. Stay here for 30 days.
Oh, that's fine, too.
Okay.